Welcome to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Here's your host, Laura Turner.
Hello and welcome to another special edition of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. Well, our guest tonight brings us a story ultimately of hope. It's a story full of achievement, the story of a successful policeman, a story of injury and repair with a whole lot of despair thrown in along the way. It's a story of self-realisation that has propelled our guest onto a mission to help other policemen and women and first responders get the help they need when they really need it. A warning to some listeners, we are going to be discussing themes that may be distressing for some, including suicide and PTSD. And if that's not something you need to hear discussed at the moment, you might want to sit this episode out. Well, it is now my pleasure to welcome to the show the Deputy Director and Responder Assist with Phoenix Australia, Tim Peck. How are you, Tim?
Very well. Thanks for the intro.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on. I love having former police officers on the show. You have such brilliant, incredible and interesting stories to tell and sort of open up a world that most of us have no access to. But I know it is a world, as we've heard before, that can be, you know, harmful to you too, dealing with what goes on with people who are in trauma and natural disasters and the crooks themselves. And that leads me to PTSD Awareness Day. It was on June 27. It must be pretty good now to have that recognised, to have that awareness day and that recognition.
Yeah, I think anything that increases the profile of the issues of mental health in policing and more broadly in the emergency services area is really important. PTSD is a very debilitating disease. We know that. We've seen that amongst not only my colleagues but those I've assisted in my roles since leaving Victoria Police. I think the message we want to get out today, though, there is a way through. It doesn't have to be a career-ending condition. It doesn't have to mean that the rest of your life you live with a stigma that you can't recover. So while some people are more impacted than others, and the condition can, in fact, be debilitating, as we've suggested, with a good plan and with good help and good supports and resources around you, there is a way through to get back to a life where you can be functional and be a really worthwhile contributor.
And I guess it would be fair, Tim Peck, to say that, you know, as you said, some people get it, some people don't. Some people, just like any mental health struggle, are more susceptible to PTSD than others. But would you be able to shed light on why? Is it because of, you know, their biological makeup or life, that whatever's life served them around their job?
I think that's one of the really unique challenges in trying to, you know, develop models of care and prevention strategies around, you know, topics like PTSD. The issue is that everyone is so different. We all have different backgrounds. We all have different life experience. And, you know, you can't really control what you're going to be exposed to when you're in that environment. You don't know from one day to the next what the job's going to be. And an example I would use, you know, in relation to life stage, for example, if you're in that stage of life, you've just had young children yourself, and you happen to go to a job that exposes you to some graphic detail around young kids, that can have a more significant impact perhaps than if you hadn't had children, or perhaps you're a bit older and you'd experienced a bit more and you're more able to cope with that. So I don't think there's any overall sort of susceptibility that we could put our finger on and say that, you know, it'll affect these people. What I have learnt is that members who are visible around their mental health, who are aware of it, who take steps to look after their mental health and are open and talk about it and have a real plan in place and a real structure around how they're going to manage if they're impacted, are far more likely to recover and to be able to move through that than those that sort of ignore it and just try and push on, much like I did for many years.
Yeah, I remember Tim Peck, and my job has nowhere near the access that of a police officer or ambulance officer has. But as reporters and journalists, we do get some exposure to tragedy. And I remember my first job back, or one of my first jobs back after having twins, was a poor little girl who found herself locked in a hot car and hadn't lived. And, you know, I really struggled with that job because you see your own children in that situation and you go home with such a deeper weight in your stomach and sense of worry about your own children from there on in, really. And I guess that's human nature, isn't it? If you can relate to something more, then it affects you more.
Yeah, and I guess the additional challenge in policing is that not only are we there on that day, we may be required to look after that family and take them through a court process, particularly if it's a matter that will be investigated by a coroner or you know, go to court, for example. And then you're the ones providing the support to a family that's very similar to your own, and it can be really challenging to separate that out. Policing's a bit unique in that. If we look at the other emergency services, they sort of, like ambos and fireys, will go to a scene and deal with what's there on the day. Police generally have to follow that up and you know, take witness statements and support people in court and so on. So it becomes more of a living narrative, I guess, through your life, that it's part of that you're living as well.
Yeah, and that harrowing detail of a coroner's report and the all those scientific investigations, I don't envy that part of your role at all. Tell us a bit more about Phoenix Australia and your role there. This is great for police and former police.
Yeah, so I've been with Phoenix Australia only for about 12 months now. My role is I'm the Deputy Director of the what we call Responder Assist. It's part of the Centre of Excellence for Emergency Worker Mental Health. And Responder Assist has been set up primarily to assist all emergency service workers in Victoria and provide access to treatment and care where they can be able to access the evidence-based treatments for trauma-related injury. There's also some other components to it. We're really putting a lot of time and energy and resources into better educating clinicians about how to deal with emergency workers, giving them some more insight into the cultural competency issues that, you know, I know when I was back and I was in policing, the idea of going to a psychologist and opening up and telling them what was really going on in my head was the furthest thing from my mind. One of the important things about Responder Assist is that it is independent and confidential. So not only do you have access to really good clinicians and you can get advice about other referral pathways, but there is a real stigma around, for some people, not all members, about going to their own organisation and putting their hand up. Just that stigma around, it's going to impact my career, what will my mates think, what will my family think. Yep. So we're just trying to make that pathway a lot clearer, but then really focus on, if we're getting people in, how do we get them the right treatment so we can get the best outcome?
Absolutely. And when they do tap into treatment, what is it?
So there's a number of pathways through Responder Assist. It may even be referred back to some of the resources that are available within their own services. But we do have a specialist network of clinicians that we've established, and they will be, you know, if you're assessed as suitable for that, they will provide the evidence-based treatment. So there is some. We know there's some psychological treatments that are more effective than others. We have another program running out of Phoenix Australia at the moment called Blue Hub, which is set up specifically for Victoria Police members. And we're getting some excellent results through that. Simply that early intervention and having members coming forward, having confidence in the treatment that they're receiving, having the clinician understanding their world to some extent so that they can actually, you know, build that really important rapport that's needed so that the treatment can be effective.
Yeah. You probably have been asked this question and it's hard to put your finger on, but are there, you know, particular traumatic events that you know impacted you psychologically, or is it a snowball effect?
Yeah, so mine was a little different, I guess. I joined back in 1994, and you know, from the time I joined, I wanted to be a detective. That was my main aim, and I worked really hard at that. And it's one of those sort of things where you never get to the end point. You know, so you'd work really hard, you'd get a detective spot, and then I wanted to get the homicide squad. So you'd work hard and you continued. When you got there, you had to be the best. So it was just this ongoing cycle of having to be the absolute best at what I did. It didn't ever set out for me to become the person that I did. I think I lost my way a little bit in that, you know, there's nothing in my mind, my values were saying there's nothing more important than solving a murder, you know, letting that family have some closure. Why wouldn't you want to contribute to that with everything you've got? The challenge in that is that, you know, you lose that balance. I also had a wife and three kids. They were obviously sacrificed along the way where I made decisions that didn't fall into line with who I wanted to be. Then as I became impacted by a mental health condition, and to touch on your point at the start, I don't think there was any one job. There was a number of jobs that over a period of time built up, particularly jobs involving children were particularly difficult for me. Yeah. And I really reached the point where instead of reaching out and getting help, because there was that real stigma, particularly the era I was in Victoria Police in, that, you know, and it's changed a lot now, but back then you didn't speak to a psychologist, didn't speak to your mates even, and certainly I wasn't telling my family about how unwell I was feeling. So I just found other strategies to get me through. So unfortunately for me, that was drinking, that was committing further to the work, spending ridiculous hours at work. You know, this whole unrealistic expectations about you have to solve every crime, you can't leave any stone unturned. It was like a never-ending cycle. And as I became more impacted, I became more and more difficult to live with and more difficult to manage in a lot of ways.
I'm sure that's a story for anyone listening who has suffered PTSD, who probably can relate to that some people take that path of getting, you know, obsessed with what they're doing and sort of tunnel vision. In terms of recovery and, you know, renewal as a person, as you've said, it is possible. Yours is a story of hope. How do officers get to that point of recovering? And can you?
Yeah, look, it's a really difficult one, as I said before, because everyone is so individual. Now my experience will be different to the next person, will be different to the next person. I can only really talk about how I worked my way through it, and then hopefully others, even just by thinking about their mental health and putting it as a priority, it may make some positive change for them. In my instance, I did reach a point where I believed there was no way out. So suicide was the option that I chose. Fortunately, I didn't carry through with that. And ultimately, my career came to a shuddering halt when I crashed an unmarked police vehicle while I was pissed or intoxicated, and took off from that, refused a breath test, left the scene, and then went off to commit suicide. Fortunately, I was, despite being a gun detective who could use mobile phones to track anyone, I got found because I turned my phone on and they were looking for me. So it was a bit of an ordeal, but I think from that point, what one thing that did do was it forced me out of the workplace. So I wasn't allowed to work anymore. I was suspended, away from the workplace. And I really had no choice. I had nothing left. I had a fairly difficult home life at that stage because of my behaviours leading up to it. I'd ostracised and isolated a lot of people because I was hiding my alcoholism, fully functioning alcoholic at that time, and really had nowhere to go. And it was a very isolating and difficult experience. And, you know, you hear a lot of people talk about not being supported by their organisation when they're in a position like that. I didn't want any support. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I was just in my own world. Fortunately, I had been seeing a psychologist for some time prior to that to try and address my alcohol issues. And for the first time after that accident, I reached out to him and told him exactly what had been going on and how I was feeling. So a good lesson there, you know, he can be the best psych in the world, but if you're not opening up and being honest, it really, it's $180 bucks in his pocket a week for not a real lot.
Nothing.
So once I did turn that corner and really start to think about how did I get there, how did I go from a, you know, high-functioning, articulate, intelligent, well-respected member to a, you know, you could only say, a fully functioning alcoholic with a really significant suicidal ideation. How did that all come undone so, you know, over a period of time, and why wasn't it noticed and why wasn't it picked up? And I put that on myself. I was really good at hiding it. I was very adept at putting the mask on for a day and getting through work and then taking off and doing my own thing. So slowly but surely, with the treatment I was receiving, I think the time away from work, the support I received from my family and extended family, I was able to start to put into context some of the thoughts that I was having and you know, really to start to do some work on who I was and who I wanted to be. And it was pretty clear I wasn't going back to policing from the incident that I'd been involved in. And certainly there's no, I think at times I've been really bitter about Victoria Police. I look back now and, I think I put them in a really terrible position by my behaviours. So certainly it wasn't tolerable that I could go back to that organisation. But having said that, I still was really committed to trying to make some change. I had a lot of mates and a lot of friends that I'd seen be impacted, and certainly for me, making a contribution back again would have been really ideal. But that first 12 months, I didn't work. I was really just working on myself, trying to get well again, and did make some really important steps. One of my psychologist, to get my head out of policing more than anything, suggested I do some study. I went back and did a master's in counselling and psychotherapy. It took me 3 or 4 years to finish it, but that got me started thinking again, and that got me out of that police bubble, if you like, and started me to see that there's more to life than just that. I might have been good at it. It was a great part of my life, but there's other things that I could do. I don't need to wear a uniform to help people. So from there, it progressed along, and the real catalyst for my change was I was just by absolute fluke, I landed a job at Beyond Blue 15 months after the accident as the National Engagement Manager for their emergency services program. And, you know, that really gave me the confidence again to contribute and to, you know, use some of the skills that I had to bring people together and start the conversation about mental health in this industry.
Wonderful. And it appears you've made a great recovery from some very, very dark days. Our guest tonight is former Victoria Police Detective Tim Peck, now part of the team at Phoenix Australia, who are raising awareness of PTSD and its impact. And if any of the issues we are discussing tonight have raised concerns for you, talk to Lifeline on 13 11 14. Back in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
After a traumatic event, the world can feel unpredictable and unsafe. For most people, this feeling passes with time, and with support from loved ones, life goes back to normal. But sometimes, it's harder to get back on your feet. Fear, sadness, guilt, and anger are all common reactions. But when they continue for too long, they can leave you feeling helpless and exhausted. Distressing memories, images or sounds may replay over and over in your mind. The effects of trauma start to creep into everyday life, affecting relationships. You may even pull away from important relationships and activities. You may have trouble getting a good night's sleep, and sometimes it can be tempting to reach for alcohol or other drugs. It can feel like you're on a treadmill, not making any progress, and you don't know how to get off. You're left feeling overwhelmed and trapped, and your family and friends feel helpless. But there is a way out. Effective treatments and support are available from professionals who understand trauma. You can get your life back. For information about recovery, visit phoenixaustralia.org.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. I'm Laura Turner, and our guest tonight is former Victoria Police Detective and now advocate with Phoenix Australia, Tim Peck. Now, we just heard some of the video that you'll find on the Phoenix Australia website, and that's about trauma, of course. Tim, I'm sure a lot of that video describes, you know, things that ring true for you, especially, you know, reaching for alcohol and pulling away from family. And some people listening will relate to it as well. Is it easy to sort of draw a line? Is everyone exposed to trauma then going to go on to get PTSD? And I guess everyone's going to have some sort of reaction to being exposed to trauma, but how do you know you've gone that step further?
There's a couple of important points to make in that, I think. The first thing is that I think we all need to accept at some stage in our lives we're going to be exposed to trauma. Regardless of whether you're a policeman or a nurse or whatever else it is, there's going to be events in your life that occur that are out of your control that will impact on you. I think from what I've learned in dealing with many other police and dealing with myself, you know, we can't predict how we're going to react. Not everyone will get PTSD. Some people will cope fine, others won't. But the real challenge is, do you have a plan in place and do you have an idea of what you're going to do if you are impacted? Because one thing I really found is when I was unwell, I had no capacity at all to think about logically, how am I going to get out of this? It was simply too easy to go back to what all those maladaptive behaviours, if you like, that I was doing to try and cope. You're more worried about getting through each day rather than thinking about how am I going to get out of this mess. So I think the really important message is, how do we develop a plan and a strategy and have those resources around us when we're well, that when we are impacted, we know exactly where we're going to go to get help. We've had discussions. We know the pathways to care. For example, if it is Responder Assist or Blue Hub, if you're a police member, for example, or an emergency service worker, you've discussed that with your loved ones. You're really clear on the pathway. So if you're impacted, it's not a big decision to make. You already know where you're going. Whereas I think quite often, as I sort of said before, we put things off because it's just easier to deal with, even though you know in the long term it's probably causing you more damage.
Absolutely. Tim Peck, I want to talk a little bit more about you. We talked before the break about, you know, how things went really bad for you, but let's rewind. Were you working in a timber mill before you
steelyard.
Ended up a police officer? Is that how it started? Steelyard, sorry.
Steelyard, yeah. Yeah, so I grew up in country.
And how did it happen?
I grew up in country Victoria, a big family, and played a lot of sport and so on. And I was come down here, and my wife was a nurse in town, and I happened to land a job playing with a footy club down here, and they helped me out and got me a job at a steel mill. And while I was working there, one of my colleagues decided he was going to join Victoria Police, and I'd never even crossed my mind until that time. And then I thought that sounds like not a bad idea, and off I went and joined. There was no family history. I'm not a family copper or had any other interest in it until that time, and I didn't really know what to expect. And then when I got in, it was pretty clear I wanted to be a detective from when I started.
And then you end up in the Santiago Task Force, which is you know, is very high profile. Can you reel off a couple of the big jobs that those listening might remember?
Yeah, that was an interesting period because I was actually at Homicide for a number of years before I went to Santiago. And Santiago Task Force, for those that don't know, we had a spate of Middle Eastern organised crime figures related, you know, involved in shooting incidents. And there were a number of, you know, fairly significant crime families in that area at the time that were operating. And, yeah, it's fairly intense work. It was, you know, it was 24/7 a lot of the time because, unfortunately, the offenders, if you like, don't work to our shifts. They do things when they feel like it, so we have to adapt and move. And our planning takes a lot longer than theirs. So, there was no sort of massive jobs that I'd say stand out. There was a lot of, shootings and mayhem and, the usual northern suburbs type of activities that went on. But, it was fairly intense work, to say the least.
I can imagine not an easy network to infiltrate too with the offenders in terms of getting anyone to cooperate.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the one of the challenges you have is really about you do develop some really good skills around how to speak with people and so on. So to do that, you do have to commit yourself, and you have to become it does become really your life, and you really do think about it. Or in my case, I should reiterate, in my case, I thought about it all the time. There wasn't too many hours in a day when I wasn't planning in my head about what I'd do next or what a conversation would look like or how could I use this scenario to move forward in an investigation. So it became very, it became all-consuming, I would say.
And is there a tactic or is, you know, with offenders who are particularly difficult to get on side or to at least get cooperate, Is it that old sort of skill of just having them like you, of getting to know them? I mean, how do you crack someone like that?
I think a lot of it's luck. Sometimes you'll get along with someone fairly well. But having said that, you make your own luck. If you're well prepared, if you've done a lot of, and I used to do a lot of reading around intelligence and knew who knew who and where they fitted in and so on. So, and it's a bit like any environment you're in with people from another world. If you're using their language and you can make connections around people they may know or circumstances they may be aware of, they're much more likely to want to engage with you and talk with you. But, there's some that I could prepare as much as I like and they weren't saying anything. as much as I thought I was a step ahead, it's really difficult work.
I can well imagine. We are listening to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. Our guest tonight is former Victoria Police Officer Tim Peck and is now working for Phoenix Australia. And if you need to talk to anyone about your issues raised tonight, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14. Back with you in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.
I remember the first day seeing this room of, 40 or 50 people, and nobody knew who I was. much less nobody cared. They had their stories and I had my story, but I didn't have to open up and share it or anything. It was simply, first of all, just observing and listening to their stories and then thinking to myself, I wasn't really living a very normal life. The things that I was involved in weren't what normal people have to do.
No.
And policing is a really unique experience. That course really taught me so much about myself more than anything.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. Our guest tonight is Tim Peck, former Victoria Police detective, psychotherapist by training too. We just heard a little there of Tim with Narelle Fraser, who we have had on this show before, on a podcast talking about going back to study after his career with Victoria Police ended, and that of course is due to suffering PTSD and really struggling with trauma that he had gone through during his experiences with the police force. Tim, you went from rock bottom to recovery. Those are cliche words, aren't they? Did you have a rock bottom? Is there such a thing?
Well, I guess I had a number of rock bottoms, I think. I guess certainly the incident.
Oh, most people do.
Yeah, I think the incident in October 2014 when I took off and I'd made a decision to take my life, that was probably the worst I'd been. But having said that, it wasn't smooth sailing after that. It wasn't as if that had happened and now everything was on the up and up. If I followed a path, I'd be okay.
Mm.
Much like everyone else in life, it goes up and down. And there were some really dark periods during that 12 months, particularly prior getting back to work. And even now, you know, there's still things that'll cause me some angst. But I do have a plan in place to manage those and I'm really clear about what I need to do. I think the other challenge is you do get a bit ahead of yourself. You'll be starting to feel really good and think, yeah, I'm over this, I'm away I go. And if you take your eye off the ball, it can really get back and hit you hard. So you've really just got to have that really balanced view that if I continue to do the right things, if I practice what I know works for me, regardless of what comes my way, I'll find my way through. So it definitely isn't a linear path. There's a number of hurdles along the way. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what's said about recovering from addiction to alcohol, addiction to drugs, you know, from many serious mental illnesses. It is not a linear pathway. Those sort of issues are similar in that way, aren't they? That you're always susceptible to falling backwards, and that's part of recovery. And I think that's an important message to send, that even if you do go backwards, you're not a failure. You're trying and taking steps forward, and there might be a few steps back.
Yeah, certainly with my alcohol issue, like I tried for probably 3 years before that accident and really had a red hot go trying to give away the drink and just couldn't do it. And I was seeing a psychologist at the time who was really strong around that notion that, yeah, you've made a mistake, but, you know, keep going, you're doing the right things. It's a setback, but it's not the end of the world. I've been really fortunate that since the accident I haven't had a drink, so I was able to, but I don't think I would have been able to do that without the work I'd done previously with the psychologist.
Yeah.
So it's it led to a point where now, and that doesn't mean that I don't think about drinking. You know, I think about alcohol every day, but that's okay. I know how to manage that, and, you know, that's just another thought that comes into my head that I dismiss. So there's plenty of those.
I think we've all got plenty of those, and that's right. It's I think a lot of it is about forgiving yourself, going easy on yourself, but having those boundaries. Now, you mentioned before that you started a new role with Beyond Blue. I can imagine that would have been cathartic for you, as valuable as you were to that organisation as a former detective.
Yeah, it was
very cathartic for you too.
It was a completely different workforce. I know that. Really different environment. You don't have to worry about getting a phone call and having to go out in the middle of the night or not coming home for 3 days because you've got a certain job, or, you know, worrying about the decisions you make may really have a significant impact on an investigation or, you know, a witness or whatever the case may be. So completely different environment. But I must say that, you know, I wasn't, as you touched on before, it wasn't if I'd all of a sudden I'm recovered because I'm back at work. I was still dealing with a number of the issues that I was dealing with, and I was really fortunate they were so supportive, and it was an environment that allowed me that space to integrate back into the workforce and provide some value. And that, in a sort of way, gave me the confidence that I could continue and I could recover from where I'd been. And up till then, it had all been in my own mind about how I could find a way through. when I went to Beyond Blue, it started to materialise that actually I could make a difference, that I wasn't just me thinking these things, that if I did and followed my plan, that I could make a difference and could have an impact. So it's a really important part of my recovery process, I think, was just having people believe in you and giving you an opportunity. And I'll tell you, they were fully aware of...
Yeah, that is so important.
Yeah, they were fully aware of my circumstances when they took me on. So it wasn't as if I was really open about where I was at, really open about the plan I had in place to manage my mental health. So it wasn't as if I just lobbed up there and thought I'll try and get through. It was a combined effort to try and integrate me back into work.
Do you mind me asking, Tim Peck, you in the segment before you alluded to your family really struggling with the way you were behaving when you were in the police force. Did they go along the journey with you in recovery and is there forgiveness there now and sort of have you mended relationships there?
Yeah, look, I was really fortunate in that, yeah, I'm still with my wife and I've got three kids and, you know, they're older now, obviously, and off doing their own, following their own pathways. But, yeah, it was a really difficult period. I was difficult to live with, and the symptoms of PTSD make it difficult to live with. You don't sleep very well. You can get angry really quickly. The alcoholism was terrible to deal with. But, you know, it in some ways it's brought us all on a journey that we all understand mental health a bit more. Mm. I think we're all a little bit more tolerant towards each other because of that. But, yeah, I think a pretty amazing group of people to stick with me through that. I know many others aren't that fortunate. So, you know, I've sort of, when you look and you talk about people recovering and so on, there's so many aspects to it that have to go your way. And I was really fortunate that one did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for answering that, Tim Peck, and being open about that, because that's why I asked. I know that when people suffer, you know, really bad mental illness, the closest to them can be pushed away and can be unforgiving, and sometimes rightly so. You know, it's all too stressful for them, and sometimes rightly so. And they can't cope with what they're having to deal with day in, day out in their homes. So I think it's important for people struggling and those supporting them to hear that you know, this was a really good outcome for you and they were able to come through that experience with you and that does happen.
Yeah, and I think in hindsight it was both the best thing and worst thing that happened was when that accident happened. I don't know that I would have been able to get through if I had continued working. It forced me into a position where I had to do something, and fortunately with their support I made the right choices and continued. But I can also understand how, you know, it's really difficult on your partners and loved ones and kids in particular. You know, you're the breadwinner and, in my case, you know, you sort of put all your identity into this being a policeman, and that's who you are. Like the school kids know that's who you are, the sporting clubs and so on, or dad's a policeman and so on. So to have all that taken away and the embarrassment and so on that goes with that, it really was a difficult period to get through. But in hindsight, I think... You know, it's made us all stronger, and it's been a very positive experience in many ways, despite the difficulty that comes with it.
Yeah, created a new you in the meantime. Now, can you tell us about the Blue Hub model that you have helped create?
Yeah, so I remained at Beyond Blue for 12 months, and then I was fortunate to land a position as the wellbeing manager at the Police Association of Victoria. And that role, whilst I was at Beyond Blue, this idea was ticking around in my head around we need to get access for members to treatment that we know is evidence-based, that we know that the clinicians understand the policing environment and there can be easy access, the assessment is accurate, and to collect some data around it to start to understand why people are becoming unwell, which treatments works best, and how can we, you know, really aid recovery. So through the support of the Police Association, through Wayne Gatton and the team, we were able to obtain some federal funding over 3 years. The pilot's been going for 2 years now. We partnered with Phoenix to deliver that project. So when I was at TPAV, we partnered with Phoenix, and now obviously I'm on the other side of the project. But we've had about over 200 members go through. The results are really heartening. We are seeing that people are returning to functioning much more quickly when they're getting the right treatment and getting that. I think just the confidence to go knowing that this is a model that's been developed just for police. I think it makes a real difference that there is a pathway now for you to go through. So we're really keen on continuing that. We're in a pilot phase. We're analysing it and measuring it as we go. But it's been a really important, and I will add, it's not looking to replace what Victoria Police does. They have a lot of resources in place to look after their members, but it fills a very important gap at that pointy end. So we really need to continue to invest in that and learn from it and learn from some of the research that we're conducting so that we can better predict and hopefully protect and prevent further injury.
Yeah, wonderful work that you're doing. That is incredible. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guest tonight is Tim Peck, former detective, now advocate for better PTSD research and treatment. And more with him in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guest tonight is Tim Peck from Phoenix, Australia. And it was PTSD Awareness Day recently, and Tim's been talking about his experience of PTSD and his recovery. Speaking of recovery, Tim, what's next on the agenda for you? What does the rest of the year hold now we're all post-COVID and living our best lives with interest rates skyrocketing and the cost of living exploding?
I guess I'm really fortunate. I was part of the tree change, so I'm now living a little bit out of Melbourne. I've got horses and a couple of things there to keep me busy, but you know, really, with Responder Assist, it's a really great project to be involved in. We're really looking to bring on board the other agencies to provide those pathways for members to get access to treatment and to just really improve the model of care that's available to emergency workers, and really just to promote that message that, you know, I often get asked, what would I do different? And if I was, you know, starting my career again, what would I do different to try and prevent the injury that occurred? And I think the reality is that I chose to enter policing. I chose to enter a high-risk environment. I knew that there'd be challenges with dealing with the public. I knew that there'd be long hours and difficult shifts and time away from home. What I chose also not to do is to pay any attention to my mental health. I didn't develop a plan. I didn't have resources or strategies around me to assist if I did become impacted. So pretty much I decided to fly by the seat of my pants and see how I went. And I think in today's day and age, with the resources that are available, we really need to promote that idea that if you're going to take that risk, if that's the environment you're going to be in, you really need to seriously consider how you're going to manage your mental health and then share that with your family. Share it with people who are going to be your, you know, your supports. Have a pathway to that you're comfortable with about where you're going to get treatment. Have a GP that you're engaged with. So not everyone will be impacted, we know that, but it's too big a risk to take to simply think that I'm going to be one of those, because the chances are you will be impacted.
Yeah.
And it sort of, that extends across everyone. Like, we can never tell when we're going to come across, a tragic family incident, or you might come across a traumatic event, you know, driving to work or whatever. So anything could happen. We've seen that. Yeah. So having that plan in place, really, it's a small investment with a really good payoff at the end if you can do that. My favourite phrase is everyday attention. But we really need to think about our mental health every day. So there's not much point, you know, doing a training program 20 years ago when I joined VicPol and hope that that's going to carry me through. I need to do it every day to think about what I'm doing, how I'm doing it, what works for me, and then share that with others.
Yeah, and taking responsibility. Now, just lastly, Tim Peck, you mentioned that you have moved out of Melbourne and you've got horses and things. Has equine therapy ever entered the equation for you? I'm interested to know, because I did some news reporting in America with former American military, soldiers and things who were knee-deep in PTSD but had found real help through equine therapy.
So I don't know how helpful my horses would be with equine therapy. They're very enjoyable to have around, but maybe not that skilled. There are a number of different, there's equine therapy, there's, assistance dogs and so on. And look, from my point of view, I don't really mind what people use if it works for them. Whether there's an evidence base or not really is irrelevant. If it's helping them work their way through their issue and that's part of their plan to help them manage their mental health, absolutely go for it. But I think by learning more and understanding more and educating ourselves, we can make better choices about which treatment options are going to suit us best. So again, it's no point just waiting till you fall over and then think, right, I'm going to go and get a horse because that'll fix me. Not going to work. We need to put some time and effort into it.
Thank you, Tim Peck. It has been an absolute pleasure and so interesting having you on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
And if you'd like to learn more about Tim's work, head to phoenixaustralia.org. And of course, if you've enjoyed our chat with Tim Peck tonight and you'd like to share it with a friend, subscribe to the Great Australian Lives podcast and join me the same time next week when we celebrate another great Australian life for Tobin Brothers Funeral, Celebrating Lives.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.